Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. That's me. Thanks for listening. I'm so glad you're listening today. And if you were part of last hour's show, wow, what a great hour with Dr. Mark Muska. I'm just applauding all the listeners with their fantastic questions. It was a really fun, informative time, which it always is with Mark Muska. And he's just a complete delight to have in studio. And he has got a mind that just, I don't know, it's brilliant. So if you have some time and want to go back and listen to it, you're going to want to go to myfaithradio.com, go to Afternoons with Bill Arnold page, and then just click on the Dr. Mark Muska Ask the Professor. It was a great hour. So this hour, we will continue on this hot streak we're having of a great hour in-studio guest. Where we're going to open up the phone lines and let people call. My guest in studio is Becky Patton. She's the author of Holy Sexuality. She's the founder of True Essence. It's a ministry that is committed to informing and enriching lives that reflect the truest essence of God's love. She's the author of Holy Sexuality, Beginning with Questions, which is great. She's got a very unique ability to integrate spiritual truth and with research and real-life experience. So I will go on to say that this is probably a discussion that will have more adult themes. So there's going to be discussions of sexuality. So I'm just giving you a heads up because you're going to may want to turn the volume down a little bit or maybe turn it off if you've got young ears, and then revisit it on the website when it gets posted, which will be about an hour after the show. So that's something I just want to give you a heads up because I don't want to have words come across your airwaves that make you go, ooh, I didn't know that was coming. So I just want to give you a heads up. So Becky Patton is in studio. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Well, thank you, Bill, for having me.
You're back. As a matter of fact, you were here once before, and it was such a great time having you here. I thought, well, let's get her back for a full hour and talk about, your re-examining sexuality event at Transform Minnesota. That was just a couple of weeks ago. So I would love to hear about some of those conversations.
Well, what we did is we divided the topic out into three different weeks where we talked about one topic each week in the sense of first re-examining our view of God in this area, re-examining our view of ourself was our second one, and then our third one was re-examining sexuality as a whole. So part of the reason why we divide that out is we have to recognize that so much of our view of sexuality is deeply rooted in what we've learned or what we've been taught in and through religion or culture, and also what we've been taught about our bodies by religion, by culture, and or our families of origin. And so it takes time to deconstruct something to understand what we're actually holding as a foundation. It was absolutely an incredible conversation with about 40 different people that were in the room, and it was interactive, it was fun, and I tell you, it was just electric. It was so fun.
Becky, would you say that sexuality has maybe become one of the most confused and controversial subjects today?
From my perspective, I would say yes.
Okay.
I think that if you look at polls, what you'll find in the Christian community, the two hardest topics to talk about are money and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think one of the things that has happened is we make a lot of partial statements, and we then say, you know what I mean. So we go to this assumptive place that we're on the same page, when in reality, I think a lot of times we all have a lot of questions. And we move too quickly to try and find an answer without exploring, like, where's the question coming from? Why do I have that question?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so from my perspective, yes, but I am seeped in this topic. So
cool. Well, let's take a little break. You know what I mean, right?
I do know what you mean.
Okay, good. Yeah. And then when we come back, Becky Patton, we'll continue our discussion. And if you have any question that you would like to ask, I know you're going to probably need to listen to us talk a little bit longer before you generate a question, or maybe you already have one ready to go. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. You can also text me a question to that number, 877-933-2484. Or if you're more comfortable with email, you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. And we'll have a full hour discussion with Becky Patton. We'll take a short break and be right back.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way, you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
Welcome to the show. It is 10 minutes after the hour, October 11 all day long. You know, I have in studio Becky Patton, who's author of Holy Sexuality. I'll probably say this a couple of times. This discussion we'll be having may not be for the younger ears. So just want to give you a nice heads up. And if you feel like it's maybe a good idea to turn the volume down, you can always go to the website, myfaithradio.com, and go to the Afternoons with Bill Arnold page, and you can check it out on a podcast. All right. So, Becky, let's talk a little bit about the original sin and original goodness.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
Part of where I go with that is we are commanded in Matthew 22, or invited by Jesus, I think, to love ourselves. And a lot of times we read that passage where it says, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. And so we tend to move and rush towards loving God, or rushing towards ways we can love our neighbor. But if we don't really love ourselves, and that's part of where I go back to this original sin versus original goodness, or how we were created. The goodness of how we are created, our bodies, is absolutely mind-blowing when you look at the science of our bodies and what our bodies can actually do, and especially in the area of sex, I want to say. It is mind-blowing how beautiful our bodies are. But if we view our bodies through a lens of original sin took all of that goodness away, then what we're doing is we're taking away the goodness of this physicalness of who we are. And if we can't love our bodies, which we live in a culture that doesn't promote love of body in a way that I would say is, it's always about something needs to change, or if you wear this, or if you put this on, or if you have this surgery, suddenly you become the person, or whatever it is you're trying to achieve. I mean, even toothpaste.
Yeah, or the exploitation of the body.
It's become an exploitation, mm-hmm. but it's couched under the element of it's for our good. But what if we're actually already good? And part of it is learning how to live. I believe we are all broken people and we are all whole people. How do you carry both? We are both. And especially in this area of sexuality, I think that's where it comes up so much, and it has to be able to be addressed.
I want to ask you about a point you just made, because I'm kind of a slow learner. But you talked about the idea that the original sin pulled out everything good about the body. And I think that's kind of, I think a lot of people think that.
I find it over and over again, because people will say, well, that's how God intended the world to be before there was original sin. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I don't think sin destroyed what God created.
Mm-hmm.
Did sin cover up some of what God created? Well, yeah, look at the first man and the first woman. What the first thing they did is they made fig leaves for themselves. And the very first act of love God does in that is goes and makes a sacrifice in order to have animal skins to cover their bodies. So the reality is I think a lot of times we think that one thing, and we want to tie it all to that, somehow causes us to no longer be good. And I just think that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think sin has the power to destroy the goodness of what God created. Sin has a power to cover, to make us want to hide, but I don't think it can destroy the goodness of what God created in us.
Yeah. So, Becky, you started your ministry, is it True Essence? Do I have that right?
Yes.
TrueEssence.net? Is that correct?
TrueEssence.net.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I got one thing right today so far. It must come from a personal experience, right?
It does come from a personal experience.
Now, that treads into personal territory. Are you willing to share some of your story?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. Since,
right.
I guess since I've written about it, it's out there. My story is, first I'll tell you how the name came. It was a group of women that were away together, and my very dear friend Emily was playing around with words, and she kept going, "But Becky, it's the essence that we're calling, you're calling us to return to. And if that's still true, and that, then thus the word came, true essence, our deepest, truest essence can never be destroyed."
I like that.
So I'm thankful to my friend Emily, who can wordsmith things. But my own story is that I was sexually abused at a very young age, at about 5, and had various different abusers throughout my growing up years. And I was able to push that away and actually hide from it. And the brain has the capacity to be able to disassociate from some of that. And so I had disassociated from it and kind of just hidden it. I didn't even realize some of it was there. Every once in a while, I'd have a faint memory, but I would push it away. Again, I got really good at pushing down what I didn't know how to go through. It came a point when I actually became pregnant with our first daughter, and suddenly I started having all these memories of things, and I had carried it into my marriage. From that, it was something that I knew I either had to deal with, because what was happening is, absolutely huge outbursts of anger were coming at silly things. And I was like, this isn't right. I don't know what it is. And so when I started having memories, I once again tried pushing away. I couldn't anymore, because I was carrying this life that I was like suddenly responsible for. And it became a journey of which road was I going to walk? Continuing what I knew, how to push things away, or try and get help. And so I tried to get help inside the church, and I was kind of met with a lot of, let's just pray it away. That didn't work. And what we know is that the body will remember things long past that it doesn't actually have language for. It's like an implicit memory, but it doesn't actually have language for it, because trauma actually happened to me. So one of the things that we know scientifically is that trauma doesn't even really register in the body fully for almost 10 to 12 days. So if that's true, and then by then you've learned how to push it aside, you're pushing aside something. And that's all I knew how to do. So I knew how to do that, but I couldn't do it anymore. And so I began to seek help. And I got help in through counseling, but the church just didn't have answers for me. And that's what was frustrating to me, because that was my heritage. I had grown up in the church, and I felt weird to leave the church and want the church, but I couldn't find the connection. So that's that's some of my own story.
Yeah. Let me take a little break. I'll be back with Becky Patton. If you have a question, we'd love to hear your question. 877-933-2484. That also works as a text line, 877-933-2484, if that helps you remember it a little easier. We'll take a short break and be back with Becky in just a minute.
All I want to do is praise your name, from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name.
Welcome back. It is 19 minutes after the hour. Becky Patton is in studio with me. She's author of Holy Sexuality. And I will once again say this is a conversation that is using some adult sort of situations and words. So if you want to just keep those little ears out of this discussion, good time to turn the volume down. And then just go check it out on our webcast. You can hear the full interview at myfaithradio.com. All right, Becky, I appreciate you starting to pull back the curtain a little bit and show and reveal. Just during the break, you were talking about an image of of a coin going into clay. And, of course, that's going to leave an imprint. And that's almost the way trauma happens on a body. Say more about that.
I can't recommend enough. There's a book that's called The Body Keeps the Score. And I can't pronounce the guy's name that wrote it, but it's, you can Google it. It's a great book. But what it talks about is how our body will remember what it's experienced, even if we don't have yet, we haven't yet grown in the cognitive ability to be able to create the language around that. So a simple illustration of this is like when a child puts their hand near a hot burner and you quickly grab it and you pull it away, you're trying to teach the child that that's danger. But what happens is little kids, you know little kids, they're going to go back again and they go towards it. And you have to keep reminding them. And oftentimes it takes a small burn for them to actually understand the language that has been coming at them because they don't have a concept of what that actually is. But their body will imprint something and then they'll remember it. What happens a lot for what's in the area of sexuality, what is so common is children. We know that in the womb, children have sexual experiences. We have images on YouTube that are public. You can go Google them if you want, but of children that will literally masturbate in the womb. Now, what that is they are experiencing something. They have no language for it. They have no understanding of it, but it imprints upon them because of the chemicals that are released in the brain. That imprints pleasure on them. So that area of their body gives them pleasure. They don't have an adult language for that. They have an innocent womb language around that. When things get imprinted on us early, like the family you grew up in, Bill, you said you were the youngest. There were things that were imprinted on you because you were the youngest in that family that are a part of you even still today. They're still there.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. I actually have a younger sister, but she, that's a longer story, but my younger sister came in my mom's second marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the youngest for a while, but I did learn something about being the youngest in that family structure before she came. I just want to clarify that because she's listening, don't worry, Amy, I haven't forgotten you. You're still my younger sister.
Oh, so sorry, Amy. Yeah, so sorry, right. Amy. I didn't know about your existence.
That's okay.
But the reality is you got, in any family of origin, we get things imprinted on us. And some of those things are imprinted that we don't actually have language for, and some of them are imprinted that we do have. So some memories we have are explicit. We have language. We can explain what happened. Other ones we have where our body has experienced something like a tension or a fear. We've experienced something before we actually have appropriate language. So for me, when abuse happened at 5, I didn't have appropriate language to go with it, to even go to my parents and tell them what had happened. I couldn't do that. And I had no way, I didn't have any category to put it in. And so what it did is I stuffed it away and tried to just avoid this person in my life. But I couldn't avoid because they were related to me. It was an uncle and I couldn't avoid him. So it's like, I can only avoid so much of it. So, but the reality is I didn't have language to go with what was actually happening to me, but my body was imprinted with fear, with, terror, and also with deep, deep, sadness. So those things got imprinted along with pleasure that my body actually experienced. So it's a very confusing thing to have to try and unravel in the midst of it. Your body remembers something one way, but it experiences something and you don't have language that goes with it. So that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about holy sexuality, and I want to put this alongside issues of things like personal pain and brokenness, how do we start to understand this idea of holy sexuality?
One of the terms I like to, what is holy does not, I, is sacred. It is sacred. It But sacred doesn't and holy doesn't necessarily mean that it's just easy and it's a bed of roses and, you know, it's all flowery and birds start singing. So like Hollywood actually would have you believe possibly that's what it actually is in the act of sex. I think there's a there's an element of we live in a society that has an entitlement to self-fulfillment. And that has made sex into a commodity where it's become consumerism versus what I think it was created for was to be communion. It was created for two people to come together to experience the, both the pleasure and the delight and the silliness and the sacredness of a physical act. It's two human beings sharing their bodies with one another in a beautiful and kind of mysterious way. It's, I mean, sex at the core is really kind of weird if you think about it. It is. There's a weirdness to it, but it's incredible. I mean, but it's also incredible. So it's like, that's what holy is. When I'm talking about holy sexuality, I'm talking about two people coming together vulnerably with one another, with who they are in their brokenness and their wholeness and saying, I'm going to actually risk being with this other person and I'm going to risk opening up to you and learning and discovering together about our bodies, about one another, about our emotions, about our souls. There's an element of you are both entering and receiving from one another in the sexual act that I think is incredibly holy. And I actually believe it's a form of worship. So you're smiling.
No, I'm smiling. I'm just taking it all in. So when your approach is to begin with questions, and now mm-hmm. I want to hear some sample questions and I want to know why is this so helpful?
Questions, because I believe for too long my experience is that religion has said they have all the answers, and I honestly am not sure that they're actually waiting to hear what the questions are. Mm. And I think that we have to ask questions. I get asked all the time, you know, where's the line? How far can I go? And I'm like, well, what's behind the question? Like, how far do you want to go? I mean, why are you asking the question? And part of it is because I think if we draw this line in the sand, what happens is people goes, okay, great, I can go up to here and I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that suddenly make you good? There's this element, and I think we have this love-hate relationship with desire, and I think desire is this beautiful part of how we're created. We were created to desire coming together with another human being. That we were created that way. Now, that's a tough one to teach. Because then everybody goes, well, if you tell kids this or if you tell people that, then oh my gosh, they're just going to go off and be procreating or whatever. And it's like, well, but if we actually taught people about the holiness and the sacredness, maybe we would actually be treasuring something.
Yeah, Becky Patton is my in-studio guest. And if you have a question, 877-933-2484 if you want to be part of this discussion, we'd love to hear from you. Again, that number is 877-933-2484. That also works as a text. You can text a question over. We'll take a very short break and lots more with Becky Patton in just a minute. Welcome back. I am glad to be joined in studio by Becky Patton. She's the author of Holy Sexuality, and we are absolutely open to questions. And I know some of you might be just sitting there listening, and I get that because this is an interesting, difficult conversation to be having, and it is not for the younger ears, but please obviously use your discretion as we're talking about this. And Becky, I think when we talk about beginning with questions, what are some of the big questions we should start with?
Oh, such a great question. I think some of the basic questions we need to start with is, first, where did I get my views on sexuality? What is my view of who God is and God's choice of creating my body?
Can we stop there for a minute? Mm-hmm. Let's create a prototype of a Christian person and maybe where they learn their sexuality. Can you?
Well, I think that's fantastic. Okay, so where we first learn is in our family of origin.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what.
How thorough is that?
How thorough is it?
Thorough, yeah.
Yeah, it's, well, depends on right. what the, yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
That's rhetorical, I think.
Well, yeah, it's rhetorical. Okay, yeah. I'm going to say mine wasn't very thorough.
Okay.
Just to be really honest
okay.
with you. But I think so much of it comes from people, when parents are trying to teach their children from a place of wanting their children to not experience what they experienced, 9 times out of 10. And so they normally start the they start into a conversation about sexuality from a place of brokenness themselves, of things that they have never resolved, or from things that they feel ashamed of. So that's one of the things that I think so often is, what's our source of why we're talking about this? And the purity movement was something that has been huge in the evangelical world, and it was based on, I think it was a good element of what they were trying to do, but it really what it was doing is based on fear. And when in talking to women, one of the things I've talked to, that I've found out so much, is so much of it was based on fear of, we don't want the girls to get pregnant. And it was the girls' responsibility to not let the boys go too far. So, and that boys, there's a premise that boys just can't control this sexual desire. And simple statistic, Bill, when boys go through puberty, if testosterone were beer, boys on average have about a cup of it running through their bodies before puberty. During puberty, they have a gallon of it surging through their bodies every day.
Oof.
So I want to say, it's not that boys can't control this or their sexuality. There is something deeper, I think, going on in how do we actually invite people into teaching about healthy boundaries and healthiness about how they hold their own desire and their own bodies. So did that answer the question? I don't even think that answered the question.
It did.
I think I got sidetracked.
No, it did answer the question. But you know, I'm just trying to figure out what is the average Christian, would the average Christian say, I learned a little bit from my parents, I learned some from my siblings, and then this neighbor kid told me something, and then I learned a bunch at school,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just trying to figure out what the composite picture might look like for the average Christian.
For the average Christian, I think you start at in family of origin,
mm-hmm.
but I think family of origin, what I've heard over and over again, people want, really desperately want their churches to kind of take this over. So I get asked a lot to come teach teenagers. It's not my job to teach teenagers. My job is to help the people who are with the teenagers to be their teachers, because that's who they're going to go back to. So part of it is recognizing that kids don't need to have one conversation a year about this in the churches, which normally February tends to be the purity month that, you know, a lot of churches will address this. It needs to be an ongoing engagement conversation. But so I think they get some of it from church, some of it from their family of origin. But I think the vast majority of it they're getting from culture. And I think that's from TV shows, from movies, from magazines, from online. And there I will say most of their friend groups are getting it from culture as well. And so it's amazing how many experts we have that are 15 years old. On the topic of sex.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have adults that come in, I'm saying, who did you get your information from? Because if you know who you got your information from, what is their source? Did you learn about sex from someone who was your own age, or did you learn about sex from someone who actually had some experience? And I don't want an auto mechanic working on my car if it's, he's just learned on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have somebody that's actually had some experience.
All right. Now, so, yeah, let me ask, as we talk about the big questions, what and how does a person go about healing from some past hurts and they still are carrying in their head fears and anxieties and hurts that have never been accounted for or healed? Yet they're still there beneath the surface.
Well, I can't stress enough that we can't do it alone.
Okay.
For me, it was breaking the silence with a very dear friend that I was able to say it out loud, and she recognized very quickly that was above her pay grade in our friendship and chose to walk with me, but also hold me in a place of accountability, saying, you need some help with this. And I will forever be grateful for her. And I was also really mad at her. I wanted to be able to say it and it be done. I think the first step is actually being able to notice that this is going on. Then I use these three N's a lot to notice it. And then can I name it? And can I name it in a place with a trusted friend that I know will, that loves me? And when I name it, then I get to decide what I'm going to, how I'm going to nurture life. And life for me was finding someone to help me, a counselor that helped me walk through some of this, to be able to actually call it what it was, to be able to no longer, I had a victim's mentality in the sense that I thought it was my fault. I'd been told it was my fault. That was my understanding, that I was the one who had caused it. And it was like, oh no, I actually didn't cause this. And so being able to recognize and give back responsibility that wasn't mine, that I had taken, and to be able to stand in a different way, I began to actually trust my body and listen to my body in deep places and be able to recognize the places, where do I feel safe? Where do I not feel safe? And to understand that some of that was some of my places where I didn't feel safe in relationship, in a sexual relationship with my husband. It wasn't about him. It was about I needed to do some healing in order to be able to invite him into those places. So I will say again, I would not be here if it wasn't for the amazing man that I am married to, that I'm married to. Yeah. He walked with me. It wasn't easy. I mean, he repeatedly, you know, probably wanted to walk out the door, and I did too at times. Mm-hmm. And yet coming back together and choosing to say, okay, we're in this and we don't even know what it's going to look like at the end. And we didn't know what it was going to look like at the end.
So, Becky, if we have all these questions now, and where are we as Christians going for answers? Are we going to the internet? Are we going to books? Are we going to counselors we're trying to find? Are we talking among our peer groups? Where are Christians going for answers?
I think that's a different layer. There's different layers to that question.
Okay.
I would say younger generations are talking amongst themselves in a way that I find absolutely fascinating and amazing. They are having conversations, but they need a generation that is just they need a generation that's a little bit older to intermix with them, because I think there's this element of we need cross-generational lines to actually do healing. I know personally for myself, I had a counselor and I had an older friend who had been through all kinds of things. She helped remind me of God's grace and God's goodness and God's persistent pursuit of me in times when I was railing at God for what had happened to me. So I needed that generation as well. I think there are people that are going to counselors. I think there's some amazing counselors out there now today. There are counselors, but it's got to be counselors that recognize the body, mind, and soul participation. I was at a retreat in Ireland doing a seminar on this, and there was this yoga class there. And I remember thinking, oh, I went over and I thought, oh, I'm going to go do yoga this morning. And the people I was doing the retreat for were like, but yoga's evil and of the devil and all this. Like, I was going, wait, what? I mean, I was shocked, but that was the culture I was in and what I was doing. And I began, and there was this moment when I went, oh, that's, yoga's been villainized, and yet I have an opportunity here. And what I got to do is I got to talk to the people about how yoga has become the thing we know. In scientifically, we now know, actually has the capacity to help the body heal, because it's breath. It is breath, and it's individual. You have to be in tune with your body. You can't take your body any farther than it needs to go. It's about teaching us how to honor the body's capacity at the core when you've got a good yoga class. And what ended up happening at the end of the retreat, this one wonderful woman that had hired me to come, she goes, I have villainized things I don't understand because I'm afraid that God will leave me. And I just was able to look at her and say, there's no way, God will never leave you.
Mm-hmm.
God will never leave you. And what if this is something that could actually help with healing. And anyway, so one of the things we know is yoga is one of those things that helps the body to actually heal.
Mm-hmm.
So I...
There would be a ton of listeners, though, that would disagree with you and say, nah, it's not of God.
I know.
And there's a lot of yoga instructors that have done holy yoga, which is instead of doing anything other, they're just reciting scripture verses and have you meditate on those as you stretch your body.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's...
But see, there again, there's a controversialness to this that here's the thing. Can we hold the tension of both?
Right.
Can we? And I don't want to villainize something, and I don't want to, I want to respect those people that have that opinion as well.
Right.
I'm just going to say for myself, what I know is yoga has been this deep place of breath and understanding how my body works and also understanding the capacity of knowing when to listen and stop, because I didn't have that. My body didn't know how to do that because it was made to respond to other people's needs, not my own.
Yeah.
So, and breath is one of the things I love, that the very first gift God ever gives us is breath.
You talk to any health practitioner, mm-hmm. whether it's a physician, a surgeon, a chiropractor, a podiatrist, they all say, you have to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn how to breathe. And even if you take two or three really nice deep breaths, it lowers your blood pressure a little bit. It calms you down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wished I was more disciplined. Now they have these reminders on my Apple Watch. Hey, remember me? It's time to take a 1 minute breathing break.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, and I go, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I just take a couple of I breathe deeply for a minute.
Yeah. And it can calm the limbic system.
It
calms you down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
we need everybody.
It lowers your blood pressure, too.
Yeah. Everybody needs that during rush hour traffic.
I know.
Maybe you should just have everybody breathe a little bit, Bill, during rush hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me take a break. We'll come back more with Becky Patton. If you have a question, we have time for a question or two. We're talking about holy sexuality today. We'll take a break and be right back. Thank you for listening today. I've got Becky Patton in studio. We're talking about a book she wrote called Holy Sexuality. So we are using some adult kind of language. So just to give you a heads up. Becky, you were talking about some research out of Stanford.
Yes.
A little snobby, but go ahead.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
well,
it's all right.
Stanford University did a study on the benefits of sex. And I think it's one of the things that we don't talk about enough. But healthy sex that is with a safe, trusting, monogamous relationship makes
marriage?
Not all the couples were married that were in the study.
In this study. As Christians, we know our place.
Yeah, yes, but I'm just saying that that's
the study.
The study,
okay.
This
gotcha.
Is Stanford study,
okay? Yeah.
And it's safe, monogamous, trusting relationship. Your heart is healthier. It makes for a healthier heart. It can lower blood pressure. It helps to build the immunity system. And believe it or not, sex actually boosts the libido versus diminishing it. It can improve your sleep. It can increase your memory. Semen is a natural antidepressant. And they've found in these studies that it actually makes women feel prettier. Because they feel desired, they feel engaged, they feel sought after. So those are just a few of them, but I think it's one of those things that we don't talk enough about the benefits of, but I want to say again, safe, monogamous, trusting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they found this. Now, they found the exact opposite in what they call ones and dones.
Mm-hmm.
They found higher rates of depression, higher rates of illness, higher heart disease. So it's the exact opposite. So there is something that God designed as a purpose to help us experience health and wholeness, I think.
just like God to do that, isn't
it? Oh, it is just like God, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm not surprised at all. So let's talk about your book, Holy Sexuality, and just the title itself is attractive. But why? Maybe you could tell me why it is attractive.
Because I think sexuality is holy. I mean, I think, why is it attractive? I've never been asked that question before in my life, Bill. That's
I love the awkward pause. That part I love. You know.
I know. Well, you stumped me.
Maybe it goes back to some of the problems that exist with it in our world today, because it's gotten so distorted by, the enemy, the world. It's become something that is been tainted.
Well, I think it is. And what if I do nothing with my life other than just remind people that being human is a sacred, holy thing. And being a woman is something I want to embrace fully. I want to be a holy sexual being, but I want to be whole in that. And I think there's something so incredibly awesome about bringing the word holy and sexuality together, because I think for too long we've kept sexuality over here and spirituality as far away as we can, because spirituality is about everything that is holy and sexuality is about, something we have to figure out. But if God actually created us as sexual beings, and we know that for women, and here I'm going to use a word, but the women have one body part that has no function whatsoever other than pleasure, the clitoris. It doesn't have any body function. And if that was either God's design or it was a huge mistake and God turned away and went, whoa, didn't mean to do that. Okay, we'll just leave it. I actually think God found delight in how God made human beings. And God said, this is good. This is like very good. And so I have to live I have the opportunity to live from a place of going, wow, God made me an amazing human being. And I think sin wants to cover that up or destroy that. And I don't think it can. I have the opportunity to re-explore that. So that's why I put holy and sexuality together.
I like it. So how might we figure out a way to develop an environment in our churches where we're dealing with some of these questions and having some of these discussions and doing it with wisdom and compassion? And I mean, do you find this to be a topic at church in your world?
Well, at my church it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, we talk about it, but I think a lot of churches are talking about it. I think they're struggling to figure out how to talk about it well. I think the first place we have to go, though, is we have to take away or we have to name some of the shame that we've got around the topic. And until we can actually admit shame is in the room, we will keep turning away from the topic. And I think there's an invitation to actually, oh, shame's here? Okay. You can go sit in the corner. Or as Brene Brown says, you can ride in the back seat. You don't get to play with the radio dials.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that, because I would much rather know where shame's at than to pretend it's not there. And I think the shame is coming because it's trying to make sure that the wounds never heal. And I actually think wounds can heal. And I believe they leave us scarred, just like Jesus had scarred hands. If Jesus could raise from the dead, surely could have gotten new hands, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus chose to keep the scars. And what I feel with my scars from my own sexual abuse is I do not need to be ashamed of any scar I have. It says to me, when I look at it, is what tried to hurt me did not win. And so I don't think we need to be ashamed of our wounds, but we've got to have people that are willing to talk about wounds in a way that it doesn't further injure or shame people.
Mm-hmm. I always think that if the enemy had a strategy that he wanted to use, it would be to try to injure a person at as young an age as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've been listening to you talk about this, Becky, about the way that a sexual experience will imprint on a person's body. And just if you're young, you don't have the words to process the experience. Mm-mm. And it sometimes takes 12 days for just the initial trauma to sort of register. And by then, you know, you're on to your next nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, you have no ability to, there's no vocabulary available.
Mm-mm.
There's just nothing. So you deal with it or it's going to deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Satan loves the fact that he's created injury and destruction and pain and misery at as young as age as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because they carry that on throughout much of life if you don't deal with it.
It's like a corrosive, the enemy, I believe, likes to inflict a corrosive doubt into our system is because it continues to corrode away in places that we don't even know. It's injuring. And I think it's time that we as a church or as people, as communities, we wake up and we start having these conversations because I think there's healing.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm experiencing it, and I've watched others experience it from being able to break some of the silences of things that have actually shaped them for so long, and to be able to say it out loud. I can't tell you how freeing. The first time I actually said it out loud, I could hardly even breathe. And I remember the counselor looking at me, taking my hands and saying, "You're going to survive."
Wow.
Say it all. Just say it all. And just say, I mean, just say, just go ahead and breathe and say it. And then she says, "And now we'll start healing." And it was like, I felt like I was going to, I mean, but I thought I was going to die saying it out loud.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's like, how did that have that kind of power over me? Because it had wrapped me in shame. And then this corrosive doubt about who God really was had just formed around it.
That's some powerful stuff, Becky.
Thank you.
No, wow. Thank you for sharing your story. And how do we find out more about the ministry of TrueEssence.net? And do you have some resources that you provide for folks who are listening today going, "Huh, I got to learn some more"?
Well, I tell you, one of my favorite, you can go to the website. There's information there. I list who I'm reading, what I'm reading. I'm a horrible blogger. I wish I was better. I'm not great at it. When I get inspired, I do it, but that's about once every 6 months, you mm-hmm. know, so I'm not great at that. But what I do love doing is I love doing these salon conversations, is what I call them, is get 15 people in a room and let's talk about sex.
Okay.
That's my absolute favorite way to do this, because then there's space for question. There's also space for anonymity.
Is that a Facebook thing you do, or is that on your website, or?
People just send me a contact thing, and then
gotcha.
I keep it real affordable for people to be able to do, because I believe that actually the places we're going to heal the most are in community,
mm-hmm.
and we have to have ongoing conversations. So where can we start conversations, and we get to continue they get to keep going?
Yeah.
Because that's what we're going to grow from.
Yeah. Well, Becky, it's been a fantastic hour, and I only blushed a couple of times. Which is so like me. Becky Patton has been my guest. Her website is TrueEssence.net. If you want to go check her out and read more about what she's reading, and there's some resources that are available for you. And certainly you might know someone that would really benefit from hearing her story and her pain and the beautiful way in which she described all this. So I highly recommend going to myfaithradio.com and then just go to the Afternoons with Bill Arnold, and you can go right to the podcast and email it right to a friend. That wraps up our show. Have a great evening, everyone. Thanks for listening. Good night. God bless. And I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.